Hello and welcome to Game of Thrones Weekly. Tonight we're discussing theories and strategies with special guest Jeremy Dan. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, and I know you guys have missed us for a week, but lucky for you, we're going to have a weekly show, just like HBO. I just heard they're having this weekly show where they dive into each episode. Did you hear about this, Jeremy? No?
That's why I tuned into you.
Okay, good. Well, if you guys are tuning in, you're getting to hear this from me, and there is going to be an HBO weekly show, and guess what? There's going to be an AfterBuzz TV weekly show, too. So look forward to that. Each of the hosts who are on the panel, we're each going to come in weekly, and we're going to bring in special guests from the industry, and we're going to talk about theories, strategies. That's what we're talking about tonight. But everyone's going to dive into a different theory or character arc or whatever they want to talk about. Let us know what you guys want us to talk about, and we can do that here. But tonight, I have a special guest, Jeremy Dan. He's a professor at USC, and he teaches business, he teaches entrepreneurship and innovation classes, and also his major was political science, which is why I wanted him
way back when,
because, you know, we wanted to talk about the strategies in this game and who had the best strategy this season. I want to know what you guys thought. Tweet at us at AfterBuzz TV Game of Thrones, and you can tweet at me, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, at Cinematic Escape. Jeremy is not on Twitter at the moment, but you can check out his blog. What's your blog, Jeremy?
Oh, yeah. This is a blog. Another thing you didn't mention, but you mentioned me earlier from my novel way back. And it's at J. Brooks Dan. My middle name is Brooks, so I had the fancy pen name. jbrooksdan.typepad.com. And it chronicles the experiences of a first-time novelist. So
That's awesome.
Anecdotal that I wrote.
Cool. Well, I'm going to check that out. And if you guys want to further talk to Jeremy, you can take a class at USC.
And I can be found on the Google.
On the Google. Google Jeremy Dan. And listen to all of our theories tonight and the strategies that we're going to discuss. So, Jeremy, what I want to talk about first is I kind of teased this in our last podcast for the finale of Season 7. I said that for my shows, I was going to throw a baby shower for Daenerys.
Where are the snacks?
Because I know I forgot them this week, but in coming weeks, I'm actually going to get like a cupcake and we're going to cut it to see if it's a boy or girl. But I got to ask you, do you think it's a boy or girl? Do you think she's going to get pregnant? I mean, this is our first theory that we want to jump into. I mean, we know the witch told her after she lost the baby with Khal Drogo that, you know, she was never going to be able to have a child again. But the whole thing is this witch didn't know about Jon Snow's ethnicity. So I think the fact that now we have another Targaryen and a Targaryen, I think it's going to be possible for this baby to happen.
If I've learned one thing, it's when you have Targaryen on Targaryen action, big things happen.
I mean, Jon's parents, or his grandparents were brother and sister. Did you know that in Targaryens?
I mean, pretty much most of that family tree came from the same seedling, so to speak. Yeah.
They're incest, so I think that's why she'll be able to have a baby. So what do you think? Do you think it's going to be a boy or a girl?
If I had to guess, first of all, I'm pretty certain you're right as well.
Yeah.
I'd say boy. And one reason I think that is because I'm wondering if the whole prince that was promised thing might be... Who knows? Maybe it skips a generation. You know, there's theories. It might be one of our current characters, but maybe that's still a next phase.
Jeremy, I think you're on to something. I think the promised prince is this little baby that we're having a baby shower for today.
So you better get it on his good side.
So who's going? Did you pick out a gift for this baby yourself, or are you throwing one of the characters into the baby shower and what they're bringing?
I thought about a couple of characters, and I did concentrate on the female characters. I mean, Game of Thrones has been a pretty darn sexist show, so I thought it'd probably just be the female characters.
Okay, so who's bringing what to this baby shower?
Well, I thought about Melisandre, I think, would be a great guest. And, you know, Melisandre, I mean, one reason why she'd be a great guest is because she loves freaking fire, right? So what she's going to, and luckily dragons can't be burnt. So, and if you have double dragon action, that baby won't be able to get burnt. So Melisandre's bringing a book of matches, you know, lighters, an easy bake oven for the kids.
Easy bake oven, yeah.
Bottle rockets, just everything fire oriented because, you know, the baby can't be burnt from that. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, God, I love that. All right, I'm going to ask you another one later. Yeah, I want to ask another one later, but I don't want them to get too mad at me. The fans on this show are pretty tough, so we'll come back to the baby gifts later. But so that's sort of the first theory, and it sounds like from what you're telling me, you think also that the baby's happening next season. Do you think it's going to happen next season? Or are we going to see her showing a little belly? Like, I mean, we saw sort of them getting it on, having that sexual scene at the end of this episode. So, and it's going to be another year till we see them.
Well, exactly. This season seemed to play out over about an hour and a half. So I don't know if next season's going to play out theoretically over many months or a year. I mean, earlier seasons seemed to be 6 months, 9 months, a year. So maybe we can kind of have that break and see a real baby. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I know it's going to happen, though. I have zero doubt that the child is coming. Because, I mean, we had all those teases from Jorah saying to John, you know, you can give this sword to your kids when they grow up. And then we had Dany saying to John, hey, do you understand that I can't have kids? You understand that, right? And it was almost like she was saying, hey, if you're interested, I just want you to know it's not possible for me. Like, are you okay with that? And then we also had Tyrion sort of bugging Dany about her successor this season. So all those problems can be solved with this child.
And you know, the way that played out that makes it so obvious is usually the George and also the showrunners, they're much more strategic and they think a couple seasons ahead and they'll lay that clue way earlier. But these all were slammed into like episode. So it was pretty obvious.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing we're going to, when we get back, when we finally get season 8, which may not be until 2019 now, we don't know. It's looking that way. I mean, I'm guessing they're going to continue where we left off. But if not, perhaps we could have a baby birth in the first episode. I don't know. The time works funny in this show. Well, let's move on to our next theory that we want to discuss. So I think you've heard this. People are saying that they think that Bran is the Night King. Now, people are saying this because of the similar clothing that they're wearing. And I saw like a Twitter picture that someone said was Photoshopped, but who knows, of like their necklaces looking similar.
They both have the same nose.
They do. And then someone took a snapshot of when the Army of the Dead was marching, you could see the Stark sigil. What do you think? What do you think, Jeremy, is happening here? Do you think that it's possible, and why, either way, why or why not, that Bran Stark is actually Night King?
Yeah, it would essentially be kind of like Game of Thrones Days of Future Past, you know, borrowing a little plot there. That is kind of a tough one for me, and one of the reasons is, you know, the original three-eyed raven, you know, that trained him, his Obi-Wan, he could see things across the centuries. Right. He had a lot of knowledge, and I can't imagine him being such an enabler and being complicit in that. So that's kind of tough if he has such a high level of knowledge that he's going to kind of activate the powers and then unleash that. Now, there is an interesting line. Again, there are no throwaway lines in this, and you do have to pay attention to lines like three or four seasons before. There was the line, I don't think I'm quoting exactly, but about, you will not walk again. Can you be a White Walker without walking? But you will fly. And I've been interpreting that. You know, he was flying on a dragon as the Night King, but also thinking maybe Bran is going to be able to warg into a dragon and that's the flight. Not sure, but this one just has a lot of holes in it for me.
Right. People are saying that Bran warged into the sword at Longclaw, and that's when the sword's eye came open. Did you hear about that one?
No.
Well, I think Dave Child, who's also a host here, he's going to dive into that one of these weeks coming up. So we'll have to tune in and talk about that. But yeah, Jon Snow's sword, the eye on the sigil actually opened when he was rising to the surface, like, in the show. And so people were saying maybe that's how Jon was protected, that Bran actually warged into the sword. Lots of theories going on about that. I don't know about that one.
I'm
going
to
let Dave handle that. Yeah. If you Google it, they'll show you. You can Google Jeremy Dan and Longclaw at the same time. So I don't know what I think here, because everyone was saying whenever Bran went back and he was trying to prevent, you know, the children from the forest, that whole scene happening, that he got stuck in the Night King's body. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really don't think they make accidents on this show. I don't think that Bran is the Night King, but maybe he can warg into him and control him a little bit. I'm hoping. I don't know, because the Night King put that mark on his arm. Mm. So it's sort of like he can find Bran. So I don't know if they're somehow now sort of united in a way. But I also wouldn't be surprised by George R. R. Martin, like, making Bran the Night King somehow, because the Night King is actually kind of bringing everyone together. I mean, the Night King is forcing people who were enemies now to align, and it might be what needed to happen in order for Jon and Dany to come together, in order for the Promised Prince. I mean, maybe Bran has to be the Night King in order for the future of Game of Thrones to work out.
Sure, and some people don't even think the Night King is the true villain. Like, that, I mean, that would be in George R. R. Martin's kind of pulling the rug out from under the readers and the viewers kind of, you know, philosophy. Mm-hmm. And we have someone in our sights as a boogeyman for a while and ends up being somehow part of the solution. That would be wacky. I'd love to see that somehow. Yeah. That would be a lot of maneuvers to get there.
Exactly. That's why it's like, it's hard for me to imagine, which is why I kind of want it. Because it would be like a wacky ending to get to, just like you said. And I don't like predicting and knowing what happens. I love when I'm tricked at the end. It's like, doesn't, as long as I could see, you know, it's not like M. Night Shyamalan where it's just like suddenly a twist that doesn't make sense. But let's go ahead and move to our next theory. So how about the Kingslayer could be a Queenslayer? What do you think about this one?
I'm all about it. I mm-hmm. totally think it's going to happen. You know, first of all, the Valonqar theory of the little brother, and she always fixated. And this is from reading some book passages too. But in the, you know, the little brother is also Jaime, born minutes later, and I think it's just sticking with the character. He's on brand. I mean, don't they say like, hater's going to hate and Slayer's going to slay. So he does one thing well, very well. And yeah, I think it can come to pass. I have another little minor theory, though.
Yeah, go for it.
That I'm wondering if the little brother, though, might be, I don't think she's actually carrying a baby, which might be one of the other theories.
Yeah, we got to talk about that next.
But imagine if she was, and then somehow there's a stillborn birth and then risen by the Night King and somehow kills her. I mean, that is like eighth level stuff.
Eighth level series.
I think the Jaime possibility is much more realistic.
Yeah, so do you think that Jaime is liberated from the emotional hold that Cersei has had on him whenever he leaves? Do you think by her, you know, kind of signaling to the Mountain to kill him, I think the Mountain realized that she wasn't sincere about it, thankfully. But she did give the nod to kill Jaime, and that's when Jaime sort of leaves. Do you think he's liberated from that emotional hold that he's had to her?
Well, and plus she's flirting a little too much with Euron. I mean, she likes Euron's, you know, shiny black boat. So I do think he's free. You know, he's out of all the Lannister colors, he's wearing the fashionable mm-hmm. black that everyone seems to be wearing now as he rides north. And he does seem more separated and maybe, to use your word, liberated.
Right. And that whole prophecy that she when she had gone to the witch that said she would only have three children and the king would have like more 20 or something like that. Yeah. So apparently he has a lot more children to have, not with her. I don't know.
The king, well, that was Robert, right?
Yeah.
Robert
yeah,
was
true,
betting
true.
All the ever.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But I even think that Jaime could go on to also marry again. Who knows? He could die in this whole next season. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the older crowd, and we can talk about that, who we think's going to survive or not survive. But
mm-hmm.
So you don't think that the little brother that would kill her would be Tyrion? You definitely think it's Jaime?
too easy, too predicted by her already.
Yeah, we've played with it too much in past seasons, so I want it to be Jamie. I hope that it is Jamie because, you know, he's been the only one really sticking by her side, and I want him to realize that how mad she's gone, you know, and it's really like her paranoia that has driven her this way. And so let's talk about whether we think she's pregnant or not. Personally, I do not. You said you don't either. Why do you not think she's pregnant?
If I could have a visual aid, you know, of the stroking of the belly, it's just so obvious. Like, she wants everyone to know. She gave this easy tell away to Tyrion that I think maybe she wanted him to think that.
Right.
I mean, she immediately did it, you think subconsciously, and he immediately goes, "Oh, you're pregnant. You have that glow." So I think she's being too obvious with it. She maybe used it to pull some people closer to her. It could maybe give her a few more extra months of support amongst some lords if she wants to try that she would have a successor. But I don't think it's true. It's been too obvious of her showcasing it.
Right. I think that she thinks that she's pregnant. I think it was Dave Child from our last episode that sort of brought that up, and I completely agree with him. I don't think she is, but I think that she is so insane at this point that she literally thinks she is pregnant. And maybe it's just, you know, menopause. But I also think that she did it because Jamie didn't have, he was lacking motivation. He said, you know, what are we even fighting for at this point? And, you know, she didn't have a reason. But now that she's pregnant, that sort of gave him a reason to fight for his family name. But she kicked him out.
Yeah. I mean, and if he thinks she's pregnant and still for honor and to fight for the living, he went north. That says some pretty major things because he's had his cycles and maybe he went back toward the light again in the world. Maybe seeing Brienne kind of put him back on that path of being righteous.
I hope so. I hope that was a little bit of a trigger for him. But let's go ahead and talk about the Mountain versus the Hound. So do you think the Clegane Bowl is going to happen, or do you think the White Walkers are coming for the Mountain?
Oh, okay. Well, it could certainly be both, but right. I do think that it's going to happen somehow. It's going to be integrated in, and almost, I wonder how much now that the shows have passed the books and there's so much, you know, so many fan theories and everyone know, he and the producers know what they want to happen. I wonder if there are some little things that are going to be goosed up a little bit and maybe bigger in the books. And right. I even wonder if there's things he had as possibilities that now he'll definitely do because of it. I just hope if they do it, it's in service of the plot.
Right.
You know, Justin, you know, not like he seeks him out down a hallway and they just have this fight. I hope it's because someone needs to be freed and the Mountain gets in the way or something that is integrally tied into the story.
Yeah.
Because if it's just a fight for the sake of a fight, I mean, I think the Oberyn fight was awesome because you needed...
That was the best fight ever.
Yeah,
I miss Oberyn.
Yeah, you needed to have that. You needed to have, I'm linking it back to the sack of King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, the Ned Stark-Jaime fight, Ned Stark needed to be wounded. Jaime needed to leave the capital to fight in the battles. It was a part of the plot. But if these two brothers just smash heads and it's random, I think that'd be kind of bad. I'd still watch it probably a lot of times. But
well, I think how it's going to happen probably is the Mountain obviously protects Cersei. So I think in order for Jaime to get to Cersei to kill her, there's going to have to be that matchup.
Yeah.
So we'll see. That's what I'm thinking. Well, before we get into our strategies of this season, who we think had the best strategy of season 7, I want to talk about who we have to pay here. We are sponsored by FanDuel. This is us paying the Iron Bank, much like Cersei here. So you said you play fantasy football, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
already did a couple
of
drafts.
FanDuel.
Oh, sure. Most definitely.
So apparently it's only $1 to get started. And if you're a new user, you get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million, which sounds crazy. So if you're a big fan of fantasy football and, you know, you want new players, if you want to be on someone's team, if you want to be on Jeremy's team, you can try to find him on there. But, you know, come play. A lot of people at Game of Thrones podcast do it. Jeremy does it. But new users get a free entry. And it's just $1 to start. You can, with your first deposit on FanDuel, you just visit FanDuel.com FanDuel.com and sign up with the promo code GAME. That's full FanDuel.com promo code GAME. And you can get started only for a dollar.
It's a huge industry.
Yeah.
And these guys are one of the real exciting players. And, you know, I'm the only professor to ever write a case study about the fantasy football industry.
Really?
So, yeah.
So you're a good person to team up with then.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's all about the strategies.
Yeah.
In Game of Thrones and FanDuel.
I just saw, I saw a bunch of commercials for them. So they're doing big things. You guys should check it out if you're a big fan. I'm a big fan of football and fantasy, but I have yet to combine them. So this might be something I'm going to get started with. So hit me up.
It's like the chocolate and the peanut butter coming together for the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. Yeah,
maybe I should do this. I don't have a whole lot of spare time, but it looks like for a dollar, I should just go ahead and try.
Yep.
All right. So getting into, we're going to talk about now who we thought had the best strategies this season. With your political science background, Jeremy, feel like
business,
you have a
strategy,
lot to say about this.
Political science, got it all.
So should we start from the worst, who did the worst, and then come down to the best, or where would you like to start?
Well, I have a best, a worst, and then I had a kinda.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's talk about who you thought did the worst.
Okay.
Worst strategy.
I think Littlefinger did the worst.
That was going to be mine.
Littlefinger is the master strategist and puppet master.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's always relied on has been moving around, moving between the world of his brothel and the court, moving physically around from the Vale back to King's Landing, to to the back to the Vale, to the Boltons, back to the
wherever
Vale.
Wherever he needed to go.
So once he lays his seeds, he gathers his information. He manipulates people.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was he stuck around Winterfell too long. You can't. There are only like five lords and to manipulate, and one of them who is an all-seeing guy named Bran. It's hard to drop all those lies and stick around for so long. And he should have realized that. You saw when Bran did the chaos is a ladder quote back to him, his face quivered. When he saw Arya, how capable she was in the fight, in the training fight, his face quivered when he gave the little bow. He should have known the jig is up, and I can't play these hands so far. But then in the next couple episodes, he still tried it, pushed it too far. Those people could confer. We probably missed some conversations behind the scenes. He totally screwed the pooch on that one.
Do you think love killed him? I mean, I feel like he stuck around Winterfell because of his love for Sansa. And that's how she sort of manipulated him, by the way, because she was sort of playing with his expectations, right? Of, like, him thinking that she was listening to him. And he was really just defeated by the Starks' loyalty of family, because he totally was disregarding the fact that that's part of their whole branding.
Yeah. If he was really in love, he probably had, if you might say, like a straight play, being kind of the Lord Protector of the Vale, the nominal commander of the multiple thousands of horsemen, the Knights of the Vale that rode in. He probably had a straight play to cement that. That could have been him. I know some people favored the marriage with Robin Arryn, but he probably had a political play that he could have made that alliance via him if he hadn't tried to go behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we have to give the worst strategy of the season to the guy that died.
Yeah.
Obviously, your strategy just didn't work out, Littlefinger, but I feel bad because he had he was pulling schemes before any of these people were pulling schemes. But unfortunately, it's goodbye for Littlefinger. I liked him, but I'm happy to see him go. So, how do you feel about Dany? Where did she weigh in on your scale? Daenerys. She lost Dorne, she lost Highgarden, she lost a dragon, she lost Yara and the Iron Islands. I don't know, she didn't do so well this season.
Well, see, I think you gotta break that out into, there was the Tyrion phase of Dany's strategy, quote unquote, because he was like her management consultant and her hand of the king. And
hand
I actually thought it was, hand of the queen. That was a pretty sound strategy if you don't want to rule the ashes. If you want to be a loved person that is not going to get tens of thousands of other knights against you, you have to do it kind of humanely. And that was his plan vis-a-vis going down to activate the Dorne army, going over to take Casterly Rock, I thought was actually a sound plan. There was her phase, which was just, I'm going to blast some things. Yeah, blast some things with dragons. But there is a reason why I think that plan failed, because it's not as bad a strategy as I think a lot of people are giving.
I don't think so either. Let's go in, let's blow up the Red Keep where Cersei is, and we'll fine, leave the city.
I think there's a traitor in the midst.
Ooh.
Still. So the strategy was pretty sound, but no strategy can survive being exposed to the enemy.
Yeah.
So, in military. So, if you want me to get into that, I can.
Yeah, who do you think?
I think
sides?
There's just someone that is so obviously good. It's so atypical, George. And I think we're going to see a Missandei plot playing out somehow. This
really?
Is a crazy thing for me. She's just been too by her side. It's been too smooth a relationship. And that Euron fleet showed up exactly where it should, time to the second, every time. And that's because the fleet probably would have taken like a week to get around to, 5 or 6 days to get down to Dorne, a couple weeks to get around to Casterly Rock. But when Dany flew over, that plot probably played out over a day or maybe even hours.
Well,
no time to get information.
I don't think Missandei would ever step on Dany's toes, but whenever Tyrion was asking for a successor, I was like, maybe Missandei, just because she is a female and, at least the Unsullied would probably follow her.
But she's insinuating herself. Yeah, I don't know.
It's
kind of crazy, but...
It could be, because I remember when Dany was in trouble years ago, they had that whole, masked woman, and people are saying that's why Dany isn't going to end up on the throne. But who knows? We can get into
In Carth.
Yeah, exactly.
Is
that what you think as well?
I don't know particularly about that. But
we can go into it in another episode, because I didn't really plan on diving into that one. But I guess we'll see. I hope for the best for Dany, because I really like her. So how do you feel about Ilaria, Sans, and Yara's plan this season? I mean, Ilaria and her Sand Snakes, they're done.
Their plan? What, to make out?
I mean, their plan was to bandwagon with Dany, which clearly did not work out, because when you do that, then you're sort of riding the tide with whoever you align with. They've aligned with Dany, and unfortunately, they were the first to go of her alliance, so their tide went low.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looked like when you saw the teams aligned on the battlefield, so to speak, if you're, playing Stratego or Risk, Dany had a lot more and already a more powerful kind of situation. So it's almost like tipping the scales even further in that direction. It seemed sound at the time. And again, another reason why I think it was kind of the scales were untipped by maybe a traitor in the midst.
Yeah, I love Queen of Thorns, but she also went down with that crew.
And she was so intelligent, kind of had her, she had her own little spies, it seemed. And if you're going to trick her, someone is thinking on, that next level.
Definitely. I agree with you. I think something's amiss. So what about Tyrion? So I feel like he's been sort of challenging Dany rather than, approving what she wants. And then tried to shape her decisions. He's really been challenging her all season, which I think is why we were seeing some madness.
Well, he's playing the hand role more like Ned Stark than anything else, right? He's really, Ned Stark disagreed about so many actions, especially, the potential assassination of Dany.
Right.
And he's playing this same counterweight role, and... it's in front of other advisors at times, so she's probably chafing.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that he maximized his influence on her? Because I just feel like he challenged her so much that if he would have just went along and been like, okay, let's do it your way, and then sort of shaped her plan to be more like his, I don't know. I feel like that would have went better instead of him just always sort of challenging her and coming up with a different solution.
Especially in front of the troops in the Lannisters, before the Tarly situation. So
that was not
He has probably cost himself, and if early in the season he's cost himself some credibility.
Right.
And if early in the season they find out this sword of truce is going to be betrayed by Cersei, he will be on thin ice. He will definitely be on thin ice.
So do you want to take on my notes and we can just switch notes through the rest of the episode? My notes are, like, not legible. I don't know if you guys can see this, but, and, like, Jeremy's are all typed up like a professor's, and I'm, like, a very bad F-minus student. Is that a grade? Can you give F-minus, or is it just F because you can't get worse than F?
No, you'd be good in my classes. I like it when people are taking hand notes because everyone puts their computer up, and I just think they're all,
you don't think they're even doing anything?
Doing Warcraft or sending, doing homework for their next several days.
Before we get into the rest of who we thought strategy is best and worst, I want to know about that other baby gift you got. Who else is going to Danny's baby shower?
Well, once Danny, gets a little more familiar with the people up north because she's, taking a boat to a goat cart to a train to a rowboat to a something. Of course, she'll get there in a day and a half. She's going to get to know Liana Mormont.
Right.
So
I love Liana Mormont.
Yeah. I mean, I'm mostly doing this because I want to see her in another scene. Mm-hmm. And I think she's going to get free babysitting coupons because what is she like? 12 or 13 by
but
now?
She's like a leader. She doesn't have time to babysit.
Yeah, but that's the age where you're taking on more responsibility and you start getting your first babysitting job. So she gets the free babysitting coupon. Remember, that's a way to get in good with the
she's
rising
queen.
She's
already a leader. I disagree with this gift. I think she's going to give her, something of hers, like one of her, like, very warm jackets or, I don't know. She's a nice baby blanket for the North. You know, it makes sense because it's warm up there, so I feel like she'd be providing warmth for this baby.
As long as she's invited.
She's invited.
Okay.
She can come. She can babysit if you want her to.
And she'll bring whatever was left of, the 62 fighting men to guard?
Exactly.
It's probably like 22 by now?
I'm going to send Jorah to this baby shower just because he's going to try and sneak in because he just his affection. He'll probably, wear a wig just because of his affection for Danny. He's going to sneak into this party.
I brought a Jell-O mold, Jorah.
I think he'd probably, pledge his life to the child. That would be his gift. Oh, because he just loves her so much. Okay, let's get back to strategies. How did you feel about Arya's strategy this season? Now, we saw her in the beginning of the season eliminate the phrase. She also worked with her sister to eliminate Littlefinger, and now they have control of the Night's Vale. So do you think Arya's strategy this season was pretty on point, or what do you think about it?
Well, her goal was lots of death, right, including the phrase. So if she was executing toward that strategy, more power to you, she rocked it. But could she have looked at a bigger picture beyond death and maybe, kept at the twins being the secret right. Lord Frey? And maybe manipulated that situation differently.
She did wear his face.
She wore his face and, essentially just gave the party of the century and wiped out that whole bloodline. But could she have manipulated that differently? She was not – her only strategy was single-minded and she was not – the goal was not anything about the realm and other than vengeance. And it wasn't even her family's interest. Like she wasn't saying what will make us safest at Winterfell. It was –
revenge.
Deaths have happened. They must be avenged.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. But I think now that she's, paired up with her sister Sansa and Jon's on the way back, I think she'll be able to help a little bit more with those faces and come in, use those to help the family advance.
Well, the other aspect about Arya is the conversations we must have missed that took place in the last couple episodes with Sansa, maybe even with Bran, because it does seem like we thought she was maybe only physically an assassin and kind of spy. If you're going to be an assassin, you still have to be a spy and infiltrate, right? And maybe she also has some of the mental tools and use that as well to uncover what and not let herself be manipulated by Littlefinger. So better strategy there.
Right. Do you think she's going to wear Littlefinger's face? Because I don't think very many people know about it. I mean, he's not supposed to be in King's Landing. Littlefinger isn't, but I don't know if she would wear it to get a meeting with Cersei or what.
She'll teleport down to King's Landing.
She could. It would be very quick travel. I don't know. Do you think she's going to wear it?
Well, who was in that room? I mean, it was a tightly knit bunch of Knights of the Vale and Stark fighters, not even, I think, other houses, and then her siblings. So I'd put the chance 1 in 3. We're going to see Lord Baelish's smiling face again, his sweet porn stash.
Well, we know who it is if we do see him. How about Euron? How did you feel about Euron's game this season? I mean, he went from being a swashbuckling fool to a possibly promised marriage with Cersei.
You know, using that position of strength and realizing you could be a balance tipper, mm-hmm. very smart. He obviously looks like he's not just, you know, the brawn, he's the brains if he did somehow intercept both those fleets at just the right time.
Right.
But as I mentioned, I think there might be a little traitorous action going on. But if that part doesn't seem to play out, he is the best sea captain and pirate in the world, essentially, you know, getting out there, timing that perfectly.
He played a really strong game. He definitely raised a few levels up for himself and doing well so far. So let's talk about...
Oh, and the other thing is he left in a high-profile way. I'm just going to leave now because I'm so scared.
Yeah, bye, I'm out. That was so not believable. I knew something was up there.
But
it's not like Cersei would let him leave, right? She wouldn't. Mm-hmm. She'd kill him before that.
Yeah. The characters didn't seem to call that out.
Right.
They seem to have fallen for it, but...
And he's on the way to get her paid-for army.
The Golden Company, yes.
All right. And so let's move on to Sansa Stark. You know, it was really great to see her sort of turn Littlefinger's expectations and manipulation on him. I was not expecting that. I really wasn't. When she pulled him into this room, I really thought she was going to go against her sister. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know if she was going to exile her. I didn't think she was going to kill her. But mm-hmm. I was really surprised by that in a good way. Like, I was hoping for it. I wanted it. I didn't think that... I had no idea, really, what was happening in this room. But I was certainly glad to see that she finally, you know, used her brother and her sister to fight off this political nemesis.
Well, she has apprenticed with the best.
Right.
She was in the court of Cersei. She was manipulated and toured around Westeros by Littlefinger. Maybe even she learned some things via the Boltons and the brutality and swift action. However many seasons ago it was when Littlefinger said to her, you know, essentially, everyone is better at this than you. And so for you know, everyone in this court is better at this game than you are. And she certainly has shown she's risen to be one of the best in all of Westeros at it by now.
Do you think she used any gender politics here? I mean, she knew that he wanted her body and he wanted to marry her. So because I felt like she was actually pretending to listen to him pretty well.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, so I think she kind of used that in her favor. There was some feminist mindset going on there. I don't know. But okay, let's move on to Jon Snow. So I kind of feel like Jon, he's like the climate change king, you know? He's like finally bringing everyone together and being like, you know what? This is something that's going to kill all of us if we don't recognize it and pay attention to it. How do you feel about Jon's game this season?
His strategy is essentially no strategy, only a goal. But also, that's... the wrong word is endearing, but just think about he, from rising as a bastard, has just had everyone glom on because he's the anti-Cersei.
Right.
And, you know, someone like Davos, someone like Lyanna Mormont that actually maybe has even more talent strategically and all this than him, and in a way more leadership ability, certainly Lyanna Mormont, but he has just... almost by having no strategy, people think he's this guy without an agenda. We're not going to be manipulated
exactly.
by him. And they do start to trust him. So mm-hmm. almost guilelessly, he has the most guile and has built up you know, the most resources. He has the third most resources in the game right now.
Right. I mean, well, he's not, you know, headed towards this. He's not trying to be a king. He's not trying to get the throne. He doesn't want power. It's sort of this environmental diplomacy he's got going on with fighting off what's coming, which I feel like we need in real life right now. But humanity would definitely fail without John, and I think that people are sort of recognizing that and choosing to follow him. And, I mean, look what he did with Dany. He got, you know, this queen to come on his side and to fall in love with him. And, you know, the future is grand for him at this point. I mean, he doesn't even know he's a Targaryen yet.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But, you know, I think that him going to a queen who had a totally different path and then getting her to change her agenda. He didn't get Cersei to change her agenda, but Dany is a much better company to fight alongside with an alliance.
Well, he only spent 10 minutes with Cersei. You never know his charms. I mean, again, that boyish charm. Who knows?
True. So I really liked his strategy this season, but I think the Night Kings might have been a little better. How do you feel about the Night King's strategy? Where did he rank on your list?
That's who I had as the best strategy. The best. I mean, everything, it's just flawless for him. I think, you know, from Hard Home and like, oh, I get to, you know, Hard Home was essentially the Costco of army building. He gets a couple tens of thousands of people just sitting there as a freebie. He manipulated that situation. He kind of rounded them up right there. Mm-hmm. And I almost think, I don't know if he has a full vision like Bran. He might have Bran's powers. If the Bran theory is true,
right,
he would have that power, but he might have his own separate kind of sight. And if he does have that, he's used it to effect and maybe even goaded the dragon attack coming up there because he wants his dragon. How's he going to get down that wall and beat the charms and beat the physical wall to get people through? He needed, in the case of the show, with no other way to bring down this wall, the dragon ended up being the perfect example.
He definitely went through a massive military buildup. Mm-hmm. You know, he got the bears, the giants, the dragon now, and he had a very, like, patient strategy, like you mentioned. So, and he also waited till all the forces and protection was south in order to break through the wall. So, I think his plan is pretty strong. I'm also hoping that somehow we get the Night King to go back to being a human being. I hope that, like, curse can be broken. You know, it's really the Children of the Forest, their sort of fault, I guess, that this whole thing happened. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that we can turn them back and then we can all be friends again.
Again, it would be very Georgie if he's actually not the villain of this somehow, right, if there's something being played out. Yeah,
I hope so. Well, I know that you thought the Night King had the best strategy, but let's talk about Cersei. I mean, at the beginning of the season, she was isolated. She had no friends. No one was on her side. She was facing military threats from dragons, and she recruited the Iron Bank to pay off her debt, you know, by taking the money from Dorne. She's got these hired mercenary force now on the way, the Golden Company. She's pledged to marry an unpleasant pirate, Euron, you know? So, I mean, she's really making a lot of sacrifices for her family name here. And, you know, she got Dany to fight the Night King, her biggest opponent. She got to go fight somebody else and lose a bunch of, you know, her army. I feel like she's really doing a great job to protect the Lannister dynasty. That's not what I want. Obviously, I don't want her on the throne. I think she is the biggest villain. I don't think it's the Night King.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that she did a great job rising from the ashes this season. I mean, if we see their true position from the beginning of the season, I mean, Jaime was ready to give it up his other hand, I think. But, you know, she's probably doomed in the end because she's now casted out her brother. She's going to be alienated, and she's got wacky paranoia. She thinks she's pregnant. She's going to be, you know, the cause of her own fall, basically. But she did a great job this season, I thought, by rising back from the ashes. I mean, she had a plan, and she learned a lot from her father. She was definitely listening.
She most definitely did have a plan. Again, I think she might have a little traitor in the other midst that if you have better information, you can make better plans.
Right.
Other than the Greyjoy fleet, I wonder if she has any possibilities of bringing some other houses back into play.
I don't think she has it. She's just going to be like hired hard forces, I think. But she also sacrificed Casterly Rock, which she can take back now. But, I mean, she made a lot of sacrifices, I felt like, that were, you know, admirable. Not that I admire her in other ways.
It's interesting, though. You know, I sometimes you know, listen to what the showrunners say, the producers, and the fact they talked about all the major players are already on the board that's going to play this out. They talked about that before the season or, you know, right at the end of last season. And the fact she was able to attract the Golden Company, I'm wondering how big a thing that could be. You know, the Iron Bank, that was already, maybe it's linked to the Iron Bank, who is a player in the game. But I don't know how many deals she has yet to do and if she can still deal with many of the players on the board. So she might be at her zenith
right now.
Like, who else, what other moves can she do? She can wait for this battle to play out, but who can she still make a deal with? Probably no one.
I think she's playing the waiting game. She's going to sit on that throne, possibly not have a baby, and just kind of, you know, play mom for a little bit.
She'll find
mom.
Some bastards in Flea Bottom and go, hey, look what I have.
I can just if she does have a stillborn, if she is actually pregnant, I can just see her, like, carrying it around, like a dead baby. Like, can you just imagine? I just see her going absolutely nuts. That's what I'm looking forward to. But anyway, Jeremy, thank you so much for being on Game of Thrones Weekly. Pleasure having you in. I hope you come back and join us again on the panel.
Awesome to be here.
And once again, guys, you can check out his blog. What's your blog again? I want to make sure they have it.
Again, this is from a novel called Anecdotal I wrote a few years ago, but it definitely, you know, it's my opus, much like the Ice and Fire books, jbrooksdan.typepad.com. Some oldie but goodie blog entries and all
awesome.
That.
Awesome. I love it. Well, also, you guys can go take a class at USC. You can take entrepreneurship or innovation classes.
Come on by.
Study some business strategies with Jeremy. Thanks so much for being here. You guys can follow me at Cinematic Escape on Twitter, Instagram, and all the mediums. I hope you do, and I'll catch you later this month. Stay tuned. Every week, we're going to have a Game of Thrones weekly show. Other hosts that you've seen on the panel with me will be coming in and studying your favorite subjects. So stay tuned, guys. Thanks for joining us. See you next week. Same time, same place.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Vala Magulis.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.